Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is a story which, like all the best ones, has goodies and baddies, plenty of mystery, and a happy ending. It starts with Ray, a bus driver who used to drive the number 7 double-decker, but who fell ill and then got worse, went to hospital and got C. diff, a killer bug, but a killer bug that didn't kill Ray. Ray was saved by some good shit, not in the metaphorical sense, not good shit in the way that, let's say, Cheech and Chong, or come to think of it, Elon Musk might think of it, not that kind of good shit, but actual good shit. A fecal microbial transplant, a solution of feces inserted in his gut that turned the medical treatment of Ray's C. diff around. The FMT, the good shit solution, is part of a revolution in medical science, potentially, in fact, a new age in our understanding of the human body that will unlock a series of revolutions in drugs and healthcare, food and nutrition, well-being, and even happiness. I'm the son of a doctor who for too long has been embarrassed by what passes for popular journalism when it comes to medicine. But there's reason to believe that the gut microbiome, the universe of bacteria that lives within us, really is the next, most promising frontier in the human understanding of ourselves. Obviously, you shouldn't take a word of this seriously, coming from me. I'm James Harding, I'm an editor and co-founder here at Tortoise, and I studied history. But for months now, James Kinross, a consultant colorectal surgeon at St. Mary's Hospital in London, a lecturer in colorectal surgery at Imperial College, a researcher into bowel and colon cancer, and a student of the gut microbiome, has been working on a project to help us understand the universe within. James, or as we know him here in the newsroom, the Bum Doctor, came to our newsroom 6 months ago for a think-in, one of our open news meetings, to discuss the gut, its relationship with health and medicine, and on the back of it, we commissioned him, well, to boldly go into the gut microbiome. James, let's get to the good news first. What did that FMT, what did that good shit do for Ray?
I must thank you for the greatest possible introduction I've ever had. My children now will refer to me as the Bum Doctor forever. So what Ray had was an oral fecal microbial transplant, which in English means we put a plastic tube into his nose and we fed that tube down into the gastric stomach, and then we gave him some feces that we'd taken from a different human being, and we had treated and screened to rule out all of the nasty bad bugs that we think might cause infection, and we infused that into his gut. And it did two things. It completely reprogrammed the ecology of his gut, and it changed the sorts of metabolites that those bacteria produce. And those metabolites killed a pathogen in his gut called Clostridium difficile, or difficile if you're Italian, and he got better.
All right, well, let's go through all of those things, because there are a few that you're going to have to explain to me. Firstly, what is the gut? Where does it begin? Where does it end?
Well, technically, the gut is everything from your mouth to your bottom and everything in between.
All right, and there are lots of people now who are talking about the gut microbiome, and you hear people talk about it as the second brain, this new frontier in science. Before we get to any of that, what actually is the gut microbiome?
Okay, so a microbiome is the sum of all the genetic material that belongs to all of the bugs in that niche or ecosystem. So you can have an oceanic microbiome. You can have a microbiome that exists within the gut of a termite. And unbelievably, people study it. And the gut is just one microbiome that we have in our body.
So a microbiome is, if you like, a bacterial neighborhood.
Correct.
And what is a bacteria?
So a bacteria is a single-celled organism that is probably the most abundant life form on the planet Earth.
Let's start with understanding the microbiome itself. How did we discover it? I love the fact I say we.
Okay.
How did you and I discover the microbiome? Yeah.
So like all good things in science, we didn't just discover this yesterday. Every generation of scientists thinks they're the first person to do something. Of course, you open a textbook, we've known about bacteria for ages. The first bacterial life forms were discovered with light microscopy in about 1670. And we've studied bugs for hundreds of years. The difference has come really since around 2005, when Jeff Gordon did a seminal work in obesity and we started to get serious about applying very high throughput genomic sequencing technology linked to big computers, that we could start to understand the biology of whole ecosystems at once, right? That was the game changer.
And I've been wondering to myself whether or not we're getting overexcited about the gut microbiome, even as I just begin to understand it, which is a little like arriving on the edge of the African savannah. You look out and you're like, my goodness, look at all these life forms. But in the end, I know they're different zebra, but they are just a lot of zebra. Is it the case that we're understanding something different about the nature of each of these different bacteria? What can the microbiome do for us?
So you've raised a very important point. So there's two really important things you need to know about the microbiome, right? The first thing is that it explains the biological variation between you and me in a way that we didn't understand. So you and I have 99.9% of the same genes that code us, right? So we mapped it all out. There'll be some small variations, but really not very many. You and I probably share in our gut somewhere between 1 and 10% of the same bacteria. They're hugely variable. And some of these bugs have really overwhelming and important things that influence our health, and some of them don't. They're kind of passengers. They hang out, and they are your zebras of the same species, but with different stripes. The second thing that you really need to know about the microbiome, and the reason everyone is so excited about it, is you can change it. You can modify it.
So what can it actually do in the treatment of diseases?
So the really interesting thing is not what it can do in the treatment of diseases, it's what it can do in the prevention of diseases, right? So that's been the big breakthrough for us. It's about trying to understand how bacteria cause disease. Now, if you go back to the 1800s, the 1900s, the turn of the century, we were obsessed with pathogens because pathogens killed you.
What is a pathogen?
A pathogen is a bad bacteria or bug associated or which causes a disease, right? So tuberculosis kills millions of people, still to this day, actually. And because that killed everybody, that's what we worried about. The breakthrough has been actually these bacteria, they don't just cause acute infections and things that kill us quickly, they cause chronic disease, things that kill us slowly over a lifetime.
Such as?
Obesity, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, mental health problems, gut dysfunction, inflammatory bowel disease, arthritis. And the reason that they're important is because bacteria do a couple of really critical things. First of all, is that they educate, train and maintain your immune system. Your gut is the biggest immune organ that you have.
So James, that's potentially amazing, right? If I understand, it's potentially a means of addressing obesity, mental health problems, all of these chronic illnesses. But it's not an answer in itself, right? It's not as though these FMTs, these kind of shit solutions, are going to be the things that are going to fix those health problems, or are they?
So you can look at this philosophically, right? So if you look at this as at a societal level, we know what makes people obese, right? You don't need to know anything about the microbiome if you want to prevent obesity. You legislate, you tax, you change health policy, and you use nudges to get people active. But that's really hard to do, and politicians are resistant to do it. Or you change people's behavior. That's even harder. Like, people know sometimes what they need to do to stay healthy, but it's just so hard to change your behavior. Now, if you take a really extreme example like malnutrition is it's an overwhelmingly difficult problem to fix in some elements of the third world, because not only do you need to change policy and a behavior, but you need money and you need resource, which just isn't there. So the microbiome then becomes quite important, because it's a way to kind of reverse engineer problems. Maybe you can bypass the major challenges that we have and create new solutions that can fix those problems.
Such as?
So if you go back to 2005, there's a kind of a big wig in the microbiome science, a guy called Jeff Gordon, based out in Washington. And he did this sort of interesting study where he took identical twins, who one of which was obese and one of which was lean, and he transposed some of the feces from that obese twin into a lean mouse, and the mouse becomes obese, right? You give it the same food, but the phenotype of the mouse changes, the physical properties of the rat, they changed. He became fat, or she became fat. So what that said was, is that you can give someone the same food, the same intake, they can have the same genes, but if you change the bugs, you change the type of disease that patient has, right? And it's the same for malnutrition, and you can do the same for diabetes, and you can do the same for apparently, I didn't know this, but you can make a rat depressed, and you can make a rat less depressed by giving them probiotics.
And so, let's talk about probiotics, because I guess the thing that I'm confused by is, so I begin to understand what the gut is, I understand what the microbiome is, this neighborhood of different bacteria.
Yeah.
And I begin to understand, too, that the microbiome is, if you like, the backstage pass to all of these different chronic conditions, a way of getting inside them and beginning to address them.
Yeah.
What I don't understand is, will the medical treatments change, i.e. are we now programming medicines to interact with that collection of bacteria, or are we changing the mix of bacteria to address the illnesses?
So that is probably the most important question, I think, that modern medicine has to address. So historically, we have designed and made drugs to treat human biology. I think the shift will be that we will design and make drugs to treat the gut microbiome. So we started with the story of Ray, right? So Ray had a fecal microbiome transplant. That's a pretty blunt tool, because you're basically saying, look, we don't understand the fine detail of what's going on. We can't really make sense of it. So we're just going to change the whole shooting match. We're going to just change absolutely everything. What we're trying to do is say, well, hang on a minute. What are the actual biological processes that underpin why that FMT is successful? Because if we can work those out, we can make a drug for it. So if you go back to the obesity experiment with Jeff Gordon, the significance of that is that the shift there is chemistry. It's a biochemical reaction. If you know that, you make a drug. If you make a drug, you're in the money, because actually, suddenly, I don't need to change people's diet. I don't need to give them medicines that are going to treat the consequences of being obese. We're going to treat the core cause of what's going on here.
What you're describing is a change, if I understand it right, James, it is a change in the way in which we design medicines instead of designed to treat our biology,
correct,
to treat the microbiome. The implication of that is that the medicines we've currently got that treat our biology are not as effective as they could be.
Well, so what you're suggesting is that they're not very precise, would be another way of saying it, and that's exactly right. There's been a whole series of very, very interesting experiments, but one of them was on a new class of drugs called checkpoint inhibitors. Now, these are drugs that affect signaling within cancer cells, but these are billion-dollar drugs. They have had a lot of investment, and they promise really transformative outcomes in diseases like melanoma. Melanoma was a death sentence a decade ago. Suddenly, you can treat it because of these drugs. Now, if you put these drugs into... all of these drugs were developed in mice. That's where all of the work does, because that's how all drug development happens. So if you take two genetically identical mice from two laboratories grown on different sides of the world, the drug industry, until quite recently, just assumed that they were identical because they were genetically identical, and that was what we understood to be the truth. It's completely wrong. They have completely different sets of bacteria, and therefore, when you initiate melanoma in those mice, they respond completely differently. The melanoma progresses and grows at completely different rates. So here's the deal. So what they did with those two mice, right, is they did a fecal transplantation, and they took the feces from the mouse that had a good response, and they gave it to the mouse that had a bad response, and the mouse that had a bad response got better. They did better. And then what they did was they said, well, okay, fecal transplant's quite a kind of rough and ready thing. Let's try and identify the exact bug. They found the exact bug, and then they just gave the probiotic. And what they found was that the probiotic signaled to the immune system that it influenced something called T cell function. And the single bacteria was as effective in these mice as the billion-dollar drug.
Right. Can I ask you, forgive me, this is going to be like one of those talking radio shows where I call in with a bunch of numbers. Yeah. What is the gut-brain axis?
Okay. So there is a bi-directional discussion that goes on between the gut and the brain. Now, we have actually known about this since about the 80s, because the gut is able to influence hormones that signal to the brain. But actually, it turns out the gut bugs themselves produce a whole bunch of neurotransmitters, and they can also communicate with the brain through the nervous system wiring that we all have. So there is actually a nerve that runs from the base of your brain down into your gut called the vagus nerve, and it turns out it can send signals up and down the vagus nerve. So there's a lot of interest.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, it's Tomini from Tortoise. This podcast is sponsored by EY. Senior business leaders in the UK are keen to harness AI, but there's a complex regulatory maze emerging globally. The OECD, a group of the world's richest countries, which includes the UK, has adopted a new set of principles to ensure that AI operates in a way that's safe, fair, and trustworthy. The principles are wide-ranging, but in essence, call for AI systems to be designed in a way that respects the rule of law and human rights, and says there should be transparency around their use. By embracing the core principles of responsible innovation, UK business leaders can better explore sector-specific opportunities and emerging trends without compromising on citizens' trust. Find out more at ey.ai.
Interested in this because that might be really important for things like neurodegenerative diseases or disease that affect us in later life, or maybe even...
Neurodegenerative, things like dementia.
Well, things like diseases that literally destroy and break down the nervous system. Dementia is slightly, dementia is slightly different because dementia is a disease of aging, right? It's kind of a disease that we have typically in later life. And one of the theories through which dementia occurs is that we deposit proteins in the brain that really shouldn't be there. It turns out the bugs make amyloid, right? They make these proteins. Now, it's a massive leap to say that the microbiome causes dementia or causes Parkinson's disease or causes, you know, neurocognitive decline. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that we have a completely new avenue to explore when we're trying to understand the causation. And it's really likely that these bugs have something to do with it.
All right. What do you think of probiotics? In fact, what are probiotics?
So probiotics are live bacteria. They're effectively classed as foods which have a proven health benefit. And the health benefit's the really important bit.
And are they true? Are they good?
So the answer is that probiotics are good, right? There is lots of evidence to suggest that they are beneficial in specific circumstances. For example, in traveler's diarrhea, right? It works. When I go to India, I take a probiotic. When my patients get gut dysfunction after surgery, I give them a probiotic. It works. It's amazing. But taking a probiotic doesn't make you live longer. It's not going to make you healthier. And it's not going to have miracle cures in the way that perhaps sometimes we think it might.
And what about antibiotics? How bad are they for your gut?
So antibiotics are probably one of the most important environmental forces that have been applied to our gut since 28, when Fleming discovered it. So the first thing to say is that if you get sick, if you're really sick and your doctor says you need an antibiotic, take the antibiotic, right? I don't want you listening to this and thinking, oh God, I can't ever have an antibiotic. But the problem with antibiotics is that it was so transformative to modern medicine. Like, without antibiotics, I couldn't do my job as a surgeon. I couldn't do it. My mortality rate would be astronomically high. So it's an absolute fundamental cornerstone of antibiotics. And what happened was we just became completely dependent on them and we handed them out like Smarties. And then what happened was that we started to manufacture antibiotics in massive, massive numbers, and then we just started to, they escaped, they leached out into our water supply and into our food. So it's not just that we take too much as doctors, it's then they're in everything that we consume. Now, antibiotics are a natural thing. Bacteria make antibiotics. It's part of their natural defense system. So they're in the soil. They're kind of there anyway. But in the space of, you know, 70 or 80 years, we have transformed human ecology largely because of antibiotics. Infection, you take an antibiotic, it has a significant impact on your gut microbiome.
And you say we've transformed human ecology in the last 70, 80 years, in the last century. When people talk about the world, they have two really different views. Mm. There are a group of people, if you like, the sort of Greta Thunberg activists, yeah, who say, actually, we've destroyed the planet we live on. Mm. And then there are likes of Steven Pinker, who are arguing that actually this has been an extraordinary century of progress. We're living through a modern enlightenment. Yeah. If you turn that lens inward and you look at our guts, how's it going in there? Are we getting better or worse?
If you look at human health over the last 100 years, objectively, it's got immeasurably better. Like, we live longer. We don't die of pneumonia. We've sorted out some big problems that killed a lot of people, right? The problem is that living longer doesn't necessarily mean you live healthier, right? It doesn't mean the quality of your life is improving. And when you start doing things that perturb or disrupt a really complicated, delicate ecosystem, there are unintended consequences of doing that. And that's exactly what's happened to us. That's why we have an obesity epidemic, a diabetes epidemic. It's why we have rates of autism that we can't explain. It's why we have inflammatory bowel disease and cancer rates rising in young people. Millennials aren't healthy, they just are living longer, right? So we think a major part of that is because there has been a fundamental shift in the way that our bugs work and the type of bugs that we have in our gut.
And sorry, James, you say IBS, you refer to autism that goes unexplained, you talk about diabetes and obesity. Yeah. Are you saying that the microbiome is proving less able to deal with that or more able? What's happening in the microbiome that links to those, that higher instance of those conditions and illnesses?
So it's a combination of two things. It's a combination of us losing important bits of our microbiome that had really important functions that maintained our immune system, for example.
And why have we lost them?
Well, because they have either been, they're either not able to survive under the environmental pressure upon which they're placed. So, for example, antibiotics, as we've just talked about that, but also our westernized diet, the fact that we don't let our kids play in the dirt, that sort of thing.
Or it's, and does that really make a difference? Is playing in the dirt good for you?
Well, so there is a theory called the gut hygiene hypothesis, which basically says bacteria educate our immune system. And if in the very early stages of life, the immune system does not get exposure to the right type of bugs and the right type of antigens, it's not properly wired to function normally. And that's why we get high rates of asthma, allergy, ATP, these sorts of inflammatory conditions.
Because our lifestyles are too sterilized?
Our lifestyles are too sterilized. So we literally don't play in the dirt. Now, we can actually study the microbiome back tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands and millions of years. So we can trace it in like the dental plaques of Neanderthals. And so we can track it, and you can track how it changes with each kind of human revolution and how it co-speciates. And it was kind of plodding along. Every so often something big would happen, like we would invent farming, right? And we would eat more starch and it would have to adapt, right? But it kind of did that every 10,000 years or so, and it kind of coped. In 150 years, everything has changed beyond all recognition. It's been subjected to such severe and constant environmental pressure, it can no longer adapt. It can no longer cope with what we present to it, the crap that we eat, for example. So, yeah, the shift has been big. We've got not enough of the good stuff and too much of the bad stuff, very broadly.
So there's a landscape inside us that, like the landscape outside us, has been, if not blasted, but certainly a little scorched.
Yeah, definitely scorched. Yeah, for sure.
So how do I respond to that? I mean, I know this is really crass, but
no,
what shall I eat?
So first of all, there's good news, right? Is that you can change your microbiome by changing your diet. The challenge is that because there's so much variation, what you should eat is probably different to what I should eat if we were trying to reach the same goal, right? We're both very lean, muscly, handsome men, right? So we wouldn't need to do that. But let's say we wanted to, you know, to reduce our cholesterol, for example. We might need to have subtly different foods to do that because the way that we metabolize food is going to be so different. That's called personalized nutrition, right? But we can make broad statements. We can say, look, a westernized diet is really not great for our guts. We have too much protein, too much fat, not nearly enough fiber. We eat too much, you know, fructose, too much refined sugar. We don't exercise. We get Uber Eats, Uber takeaways. We don't, you know, we can say all of those things and we can correct that. So if I can tell you to do one thing for your gut, it's to have 50 grams of fiber a day.
What is fiber? Spinach is fiber?
Spinach is fiber.
Is bread fiber?
Well, bread can be fiber. Yeah, but you've got to have the right kind of bread. So you want a nice...
Biscuits, maybe?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, we'll Jaffa cakes. Yeah. I'm going to assume that our listeners happily know what fiber is. They know more than me.
So when we've done studies looking at African populations, so rural African populations, you consume massive amounts of fiber, the metabolites that fiber produces are really good for the gut. They're anti-carcinogenic, they're anti-inflammatory, and they help you along. And when you change them onto an Americanized diet, those just go away, and they go away within 2 weeks. And they're replaced with abundances of kind of less good metabolites like bile acids, which we know are carcinogenic and we know which cause inflammation. So this is like a massive oversimplification, but generally if you can take one thing away from this podcast, it's just put more fiber in your diet. It's incredibly good for everything. Diabetes risk, cardiovascular disease risk, cancer risk, it's really good. And we've known it for years and we just completely ignored it.
And describe then 25 years from now, if that's a reasonable time frame, a generation if you like, what will our then, I suppose, much greater and better understanding of the gut microbiome have done to medicine?
So I think there's two answers to that question. The first is a doctor's answer, because doctors, I treat disease. Like, I'm a cancer surgeon. Most of the disease I treat is preventable. That's a really depressing thing. Most of colorectal cancer is preventable. So as a society, are we going to move to a prevention-based society, which is what the health service is trying to do now, actually, and really invest in trying to stop these chronic diseases ever happening in the first place? Or are we going to just focus on constantly trying to treat this impossible, ever-growing mountain of disease that we can't manage? And of course, it has to be the former. And that's where the microbiome is so important. And so if you ask me one thing, what do I think is going to be the most important thing? It's going to be understanding the maternal microbiome and how the microbiome assembles and is structured in early life. Because it's my belief that that is the most critical time to intervene. If we can set that metabolic tone in the very first 100 days of life, probably the implications for the rest of that individual's life are going to be really, really significant.
Length of life and quality of life?
Length and quality. Because I think what happens is that, for example, if your microbiome is severely perturbed, so disrupted and abnormal in the first couple of years of life, I think what happens is you just get set on a metabolic clock.
Well, let's go back to the happy ending that I promised to Ray and his FMT.
Yeah.
What's the lesson of Ray? Is it the case that sooner or later I'm just going to have to eat some shit?
No, that's not the lesson. The lesson here is that I think it's a positive lesson. I think it is an optimistic lesson. I think the lesson is that we have discovered an entirely new way to diagnose and treat disease, and we've got a completely new resource for drug discovery that didn't exist, you know, 15, 20 years ago. Ray's treatment gives us hope, because he would have died. He would absolutely have died. And it's amazing that he's here. But also, we are going to get better and better and better at refining how we give FMT, and we're going to ultimately move away from FMT into giving single strains or single bugs, or we're going to engineer those bacteria. And you're not going to get C. diff, James. You're going to be all right. I promise you, I won't give you an FMT.
But the lesson is not that you're going to eat good shit, but you are going to eat the goodness that resides in your shit.
Exactly right. So I think I've talked about this a little bit, but when you think about vaccinating your kids, we talk about herd immunity, right? So for an intervention to work with vaccination, everyone's got to take it. Because if one person gets the disease, well, you know, the vaccine doesn't work and everyone dies, right? That's why vaccinating your kids is important. We need to think more like that for the treatment of our microbiome. We need to think about it really at a sort of societal level, because you can eat good stuff, right? But if there's still antibiotics floating around everywhere that you live and work, and then it's still going to perturb your gut microbiome. So that's why you can live in London, you can go to the gym every day, you can eat good food, but you can still suffer from chronic disease. It's not fair.
James, I wanted to say thank you to you. I say genuinely thank you, because if you're listening to this, you're probably either trialling out Tortoise or you're one of our Tortoise members. And when we started out, we said we were going to try and do news differently. We're going to try and understand these things that are changing the world, the way we live, not just breaking news. And a story like the gut microbiome is almost impossible to do if you're a standard journalist. You can't just call up and report that one out. And so one of the things we discovered was if you were going to try and do a story like this, you were going to have to ask people with a depth of expertise. And I felt all the way through, because if you're listening, James and I and fellow editors have been working on a really in-depth look at the gut microbiome, which we're going to be publishing on the Tortoise website and in the Tortoise app. But we've been working on this for some months, and you've been unbelievably patient with a series of questions, even more idiotic than the ones I asked you. So thank you for this. Thank you for talking to us. But thank you also for providing us, if you like, a journey into the universe that lives inside us. It's one of those stories that really does make you optimistic and excited about what might happen next, and better understand not just the world, but our very insides. James Kinross, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hello, it's Tomini from Tortoise. This podcast is sponsored by EY. UK business leaders are quietly confident that better times are coming. More than half of those who responded to the recent EY CEO Outlook survey believe their profitability would increase in 2024. As businesses look to the future, transformation is clearly front and centre on the 2024 CEO agenda, with the vast majority of leaders planning to maintain or accelerate their transformational change in 2024. With 76% of CEOs in agreement that AI will deliver transformative efficiency benefits to their organization, how can AI be put to use to enhance innovation efforts? Find out how integrating AI into your business could minimize the negative impacts on the workforce, boost productivity, and improve overall employee experience by reading the full report at ey.com.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Hi, I'm investigative journalist Nicola Tallant, host of Crime World, a podcast all about criminals, drugs, and the sins of the underworld in Ireland and across the globe. Join me and my guests for a peek into the world of gangland crime, dirty money, and mysterious cold cases. With 5 brand new episodes per week, and sometimes even more, there's something for every type of crime podcast enthusiast. You can listen to Crime World now, wherever you get your podcasts.